From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Police in San Diego, California are investigating as a hate crime a vicious attack against a 17-year-old Syrian refugee. The young man was riding the metro trolley car when a man asked him if he was Mexican. When he replied that he was Arab, the man allegedly beat him, leaving the boy's face injured. The attack on the high schooler is emblematic of what growing numbers of Arab, Muslim, and those perceived to be Muslim face in a country headed by a president who openly promotes Islamophobia. The Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, just released its annual report on bullying in schools and found high rates of hateful behavior aimed at Muslim school children. Joining me to discuss the report is Dustin Cron, Executive Director of CARE San Diego. Welcome to the program, Dustin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's start by talking about the beating of the Syrian refugee, a 17-year-old boy. This happened in your city. What do we know about this attack so far?
Like you said, it seems like he was just riding the trolley and a man approached him. He heard him speaking Arabic, asked him if he was Mexican. When he said no, that he was Arab, then he started to fight him and beat the boy pretty badly, unfortunately. And and over the last 2 weeks, there's been a couple of these incidents. The difference between them with the women who were wearing hijab and were attacked in downtown San Diego, there were a group of bystanders who stood up with them and helped to intervene to make sure that nothing really bad happened. Whereas in this case, unfortunately, no one on the trolley intervened for the young boy.
So police are investigating this as a hate crime. Is that some measure of, a positive aspect of this case, that at least it's being investigated as something that could lead to some kind of charge that indicates the boy was attacked precisely because he was Arab and or Muslim?
It's good, of course, that it's being charged as a hate crime, but I think that it's clear that San Diego has a race problem. It has a problem with white supremacy. It has a problem with Trump supporters acting on this white supremacy against immigrants, Muslims, people of color more broadly. So we really think the city needs to step up and talk about what they're going to do about white supremacy and how we create a city where racial equity is taken seriously.
So, of course, this boy was 17 years old. He's in high school, and the attack came at about the same time as CARE's annual report on bullying in the classroom came out. The report is called Singled Out, Islamophobia in the Classroom and the Impact of Discrimination on Muslim Students. I understand this is essentially a survey of a large number of Muslim kids that are in school that CARE conducts annually?
Yeah, that's correct.
So how many children were surveyed? What sorts of questions were asked?
There were around 1,500 students surveyed across the state. And there were questions asked ranging from how comfortable do you feel letting your peers know that you're Muslim or not at school? How do you feel that Islam, the history of Islam or Muslims is taught in your school? When Muslims are mentioned, are portrayed fairly? How do you feel as a student on campus? Do you feel that you're bullied because of your faith or race?
So I understand. So that means that this particular survey was limited to the state of California.
That's correct. This was a survey conducted by CARE California.
So of course, there unfortunately is always a certain level of bullying that children experience and that some children experience in the classroom. What were the results of this survey? What did you find about how the experience of Muslim students specifically differs from that of non-Muslim students in the classroom?
Right. We found that Muslim students are about two times more likely to be bullied at school than other students. We found that a large number of Muslim students, up to 30%, don't feel comfortable telling their peers that they're Muslim. We found that the almost 50% of the students didn't feel that Islam or Muslims were discussed fairly in their classroom. And so, you know, we feel that this is pretty unfortunate. And then there's a lot of things beyond the statistics also, right, that we see that the majority of Muslim majority schools or Islamic schools have huge waiting lists. The majority of Muslim parents feel so uncomfortable sending their students to public schools that they're trying to keep them out and keep them in Muslim majority schools so that they even feel safe.
So the is the problem worse for kids, particularly girls who might be wearing the hijab, who, you know, are most visibly Muslim?
Yeah, of course. And I think that's what happened downtown in San Diego a couple of weeks ago, is you end up with this situation where this man attacks these women just because they're wearing a headscarf. Of course, Muslim women wear the flag of Islam with their headscarf, their hijab, every day. And so they're the most visible Muslims in the society, and they face the most hatred, unfortunately, because of that.
What did you find about the response or reactions of teachers or school administrators as per the children surveyed? Presumably, if bullying occurs, it's likely that it might get reported. Did children say that they found support among the adults in their environment?
Unfortunately, we get cases pretty regularly of even teachers bullying Muslim students in the classroom, where teachers will be speaking about Islam or Muslims in the context of their class. We had a case recently right after the anniversary of 9/11, where a teacher was speaking very negatively about Muslim women, very negatively about Islam and Muslims, so bad that the 10-year-old student, the student in elementary school, has to stand up and defend himself. Unfortunately, when we went with the father to meet with the principal and the teacher was so afraid that I was even there as an advocate for Muslims, that they wouldn't even let me sit in the meeting. It just seems to me that the teachers and principals aren't taking this as serious as it is. And it ended up being about the teacher and protecting the teacher rather than protecting the student or the parent.
Do children end up missing school at higher rates because they feel unsafe at school as Muslims?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we found that's the case where some, you know, it's a small percentage, but there are Muslim students who will stay home because of how unsafe they can feel within that environment. And so, you know, and this, it shows up in many ways. It can become long-term. This type of bullying can lead to psychological problems. It can lead to, you know, self-esteem issues. And we really want Muslim students to feel like they belong within this society, just like everyone else should.
What about when Muslim children ask for accommodations for their religious needs? For example, you know, when you have Jewish kids who need a day off to celebrate a particular holiday or have any particular needs, or even, you know, of course, unfortunately, our schools are entirely defaulted to the needs of Christians and only Christians and not other religions. But we do have the constitutionally protected freedom of religion. Are Muslim children's rights to practice their religion respected in the classroom?
Yeah, unfortunately, we still find a number of cases where, especially with Muslim holidays, the Eid holidays, a lot of schools and administrators aren't fully respecting the rights of the Muslim students to either reschedule tests or to be absent those days. And but for the most part, I think that in that area, people are doing pretty good. Only the high school students would really need to pray during school in those hours. And so that's the issue of accommodation. It seems like schools are doing okay, but they could do better.
One of the things that the report found was that a lot of bullying actually happens in the social media realm, digital bullying, online harassment, which, of course, ironically, our First Lady has taken it upon herself, despite the fact that her husband is the nation's largest online bully. What did the report find about how Muslim kids face bullying online?
Yeah, unfortunately, it seems like that is one of the highest areas where Muslim youth face bullying, is through things like social media and direct messaging. This can be an avenue where it may be easier for someone to show young people to show their racism, because maybe it's not socially acceptable in public. And so, of course, social media has higher rates of bullying across the board these days, and Muslim students face it in a higher level in social media as well.
I want to turn to the broader national context of what we are seeing play out in this report. Today, we have Muslim American women serving in Congress. You know, for the first time in 2018, that happened. And in fact, we have the first openly Muslim woman in Congress, Ilhan Omar, the only hijab-wearing Muslim woman in Congress, who is, of course, perhaps unsurprisingly become the biggest target of both the president and of conservative Republicans. Ilhan Omar is speaking at your annual conference and is being targeted by conservative Republicans. There was a story recently of one state-level Republican who has been posting this debunked image of a woman that he claims is Ilhan Omar serving at a terrorist training camp in Somalia, an Al-Qaeda training camp. What do you make of this story? How impactful is it and detrimental is it?
Well, the case of Ilhan Omar, Representative Ilhan Omar, shows how racism works in this country. It shows that racism is, of course, intersectional. And so for a woman who's a refugee of African descent and a Muslim who wears hijab, she checks off all those boxes. And so, of course, she'll get it the worst. And you see that the president is able to really, you know, focus in on her. And then all these Republicans say, why should you be in Congress? And then all this language of go back home is constantly used. And so, I mean, it's so bad that she's facing such serious threats against her life that anywhere she speaks, you have to have, you know, full security teams in place to protect her. I mean, it's really unbelievable that we're at that point where both Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar face these types of real racist threats against their lives.
Right. This particular piece of fake news, if you will, it was a meme that was created from a photograph of an entirely different woman. The photograph was taken in Mogadishu 4 years before Ilhan Omar was born. And it's been shared widely in social media. And the Republican state representative in question who posted it took it down after pressure, but he still continued to call her a terrorist. This can obviously lead directly to threats on her life. How important is it to elevate her words, especially given that she is a guest speaker at the CARE conference?
Well, as she puts it, you know, we're in the fight of our lives. This is one of the movements of our time, of our lives. These verses in the Quran behind me, they say, essentially, God is calling humanity to know one another. And I think that that's one of the most important messages that we can speak of in our times, is how do we as humanity know one another? This isn't a call just for Muslims, that people who are white supremacists have to understand that it's their sickened hearts that would allow them to act this way, that would allow them to act, as Malcolm X called, as devils on this earth, who would hate people for no reason besides what their faith is or what their race is. It makes absolutely no sense in 2019 for people to live this way. And we as a country have to really have a reckoning with racism and take seriously this legacy of what it's created, because now here we are. Here we are in 2019, where people are more interested in voting for a president based on the fact that he's a white supremacist than their own economic interest. When you have, you know, people like Bernie Sanders and others who would actually lift up the lives of poor people versus this candidate who's only interested in lifting up racism for his own wealth and power.
And in fact, Ilhan Omar has endorsed Sanders for president. And so this goes, of course, to the highest levels of government, to the White House itself. CARE opposed very recently two instances, I understand, where the president's Florida resort, Mar-a-Lago, offered to host conventions or conferences by openly anti-Muslim organizations. Most recently, it was this group called the Center for Security Policy, a very innocuous sounding organization. Before that, Act for America, a known hate group. Both events were canceled, though. Do you attribute that to CARE's advocacy?
I think that our advocacy always plays a role in helping to move these types of issues that are Islamophobic and against Muslims. You know, I mean, this president is a white supremacist, plain and simple. If he's not talking about Muslims, he's talking about his border wall. We as a community, the Muslim community, represents everyone, because everyone, all different racial groups, are a part of our community. And a great example of the is here in San Diego and Tijuana is the work we're doing with the Border Church, what we now call the Border Mosque, where we meet once a month at Friendship Park, where people are able to pray literally across beyond borders with each other and call for just immigration policies while creating space for families who've been separated by this country's immigration.
So Muslim families are also impacted by the family separation?
Yeah, of course, there's a growing Muslim band population of Yemenis and Somalis in Tijuana. And unfortunately, that people don't know that throughout the country, but with the work that we've been doing by being present in Tijuana, you know, when we have this growing Muslim population, this growing Latino Muslim population, and Latinas leading in particular, they're trying to build a shelter in Tijuana. We've been able to find that community.
So I want to go back to the report on bullying. We talked about what you found, the very high levels of bullying Muslim children face. What are the recommendations? Because, of course, when Islamophobia impacts the youngest of a vulnerable population, it's important to start there in terms of addressing the issue and especially addressing their safety. What are the recommendations that the report makes on tackling bullying in schools for Muslim kids?
Sure. I think first schools have to recognize that one of the most the groups who face the most bullying is, of course, Muslim students. So you need to create trainings for teachers and then teach about Islam and Muslims in open ways with real dialogue led by experts on these issues in classrooms. I think that's the first step. The second step, you know, and we've been working and lobbying for this ethnic studies bill in the state of California this year, where if we were to actually have ethnic studies as a requirement in our schools throughout the state of California at the Cal State University system, we believe that talking about the history of racism in this country, talking about the history of social struggle of oppressed peoples of color and how they've created change within the society would help to alleviate this type of bullying, would help to create more space for understanding and belongingness for all students across the board, whether they're Muslim, immigrant communities. We have huge refugee communities here in San Diego. And so we have real need. And I think that beyond even the part about the Islamic studies or teaching Muslim studies is really about understanding the vast differences and diversity of the Muslim students within your school populations. And so really doing some research on where those students may be from, how they may differ as Muslims, because, you know, that's the thing. Muslims are also the religion of Islam is also the world's most diverse faith. And so it's not easy. And you need organizations like CARE to come in and help train your teachers.
I understand that the report is also recommending the support of a federal bill called the Safe Schools Improvement Act.
Right. This would broaden the protections for students based on race, color, national origin, disability, sexual orientation, or gender identity. And I think that that's really important because oftentimes racial discrimination based on religion isn't a part of this larger conversation around race in this country. And so the discrimination that Muslim students face or Jewish students face or Hindu students face or Buddhist students face, because much of our curriculums are still based in the historical curriculums of this country that privileges Christianity and doesn't teach well broadly about students' faith. And so because of that, these students have to be protected because we see the reality of what Muslim students face in the United States through this bullying report.
Finally, Dustin, there do exist, as I said, you know, we have a constitution that protects the freedom of religion. This Trump administration seems quite obsessed about protecting religious freedom, but only for Christians. And it's really interesting to see, especially with certain cases coming up before the Supreme Court, whether the country and whether lawmakers and whether our judiciary apply the same standards of religious freedom to especially Muslims as they do to Christians, right?
I mean, of course, you know, American Indians, people of Native background in this country didn't have religious freedom until the 1960s, I believe, a bill was passed. And those are the, you know, indigenous people of these lands. And so, unfortunately, protections for Christians are deeply embedded into this country's history and its laws. We need to create a broader reality, a broader legal system that's protecting all people of all faith.
Give out a website where people can find out more about the work that CARE does, read the report, and even find out about your upcoming annual banquet.
So for CARE California, you can visit ca.cair.org. And for CARE National, you can visit care.com.
That's cair.com. Dustin, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dustin Cron is the executive director of CARE San Diego. We've been discussing, among other things, CARE's latest report on bullying in schools. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.